And welcome back inside the home office. I'm Craig D'Amico, and this is episode 9 of NEC Football on the Run. This past weekend, we had the first mid-season mega matchup in the NEC in quite some time. We even had a live watch-along version of the podcast during the game, which was up over on the NEC YouTube channel on Saturday night. So coming up on today's show, we will recap that experience, plus we'll recap all the other action from around the NEC this past weekend. This past weekend, again, had 4 matchups, 3 conference games, and 2 teams, St. Francis and New Haven, that were both on a bye. Also on today's show, we will highlight the top 3 stars of the week. We had a big shakeup in the top 3. We'll also look ahead to week number 9, plus we'll chat with our special guest, Wagner Seahawks running back Andre Hines Jr. Hines of the Seahawks are getting ready for a big NEC TV game coming up on Saturday afternoon. But first, let's look back at week 8. It's our top headlines. We start with our pick 6. And we start in Erie, Pennsylvania, under the lights at Saxon Stadium for a battle between the NEC Unbeatens as 2-0 Mercyhurst hosted 2-0 Duquesne. We were live on the NEC's YouTube on Saturday night doing a watch-along live stream. Basically, we were hanging out watching the game, giving viewers an alternative broadcast similar to what you get on Thursday Night Football with, you got Alan Kirk, and then you got the Spanish announcers, and then you have the Prime Vision cast. You have all the different versions of alternative broadcast that you could watch. So this was a version of that. On our version, on our live stream, we did a cooking demonstration for one of the signature foods from Erie, Pennsylvania, pepperoni balls. They were delicious. So if you're looking for the recipe, go back and watch the first couple minutes of that watch along. We also told some stories. We gave some historical insight and perspective, which was great because we needed all of it. We needed all of it, talking for 3 hours during a game that wasn't really that close. Duquesne set the tone right from the opening kick. Remember last week, prior to last week, they weren't great starting in the first quarter. They only had 14 points in their first 5 games in the first quarter combined, and that all changed a week ago when they ran back the opening kickoff for a touchdown and had 28 first quarter points. Well, this week, they didn't run back the opening kickoff, but they got the first possession and they had a Mercyhurst-like sustained drive. They went 10 plays, 75 yards in 6 minutes. But here's what's interesting about this drive. While we were trying to get ready to make pepperoni balls on our watch along, the first 9 straight plays of this drive were all rushing plays. 5 run attempts for Ness Davis, 4 to Taj, the running back. And then on the 10th play of the drive, they finally open up the playbook and unleash the first pass play. And Tyler Riddell found Joey Isabella 20 yards for the touchdown. Duquesne took a 7-0 lead. It was Isabella's 4th straight game with a touchdown catch. What an opening drive for Duquesne, certainly sending a message. 9 straight runs to start the game, setting the tone, getting big chunk runs, getting all the way to the edge of the red zone. And then when you finally get to the 20-yard line, there's the pass. 1 pass, 1 score. I mean, Duquesne really came and set the message, set the tone for the evening with that opening drive. Get 9 straight rush plays before the passing play on the 10th play for the touchdown. Incredible. Now, Mercyhurst, their first drive, they're the ones that are used to establishing time of possession and putting together these sustained drive. On their first drive, they were set behind the sticks early with a false start penalty, and then they ended up going 3 and out. And Duquesne took over for their second series, drive number 2 on their own 41-yard line. And this time, they only needed 1 play to score. They gave it to Ness Davis, who burst free for a touchdown. 1 play, 59 yards to make it 14-0. So they got a 10-play drive where 9 of them were rushes. They threw for a touchdown on the 10th play. They forced a 3 and out. They got it right back. And 1 play, 59 yards to the end zone. 14-0 before we were even done making our pepperoni balls on the watch-along. Now, Mercyhurst, they just couldn't get things going. They went 3 and out on their first 3 drives overall. After their first 13 plays, they had only racked up a total of -5 yards. That's right. I had more yards than they did, and I was sitting on a computer watch-along. So that was not good. Right before the end of the half, It went from bad to worse for Mercyhurst. You can't back her. It back 35 yards for a fumble touchdown. DeJohn Hopkins had a touchdown run in the fourth quarter. All in all, Duquesne shuts out Mercyhurst 37-0. It's the sixth straight year that Duquesne's defense has tallied at least one shutout. Duquesne this year wins their fourth in a row. They improved to a perfect 3-0 in league play for a third straight year. And by the way, they ended up winning a share of the league title each of the previous two seasons when they started 3-0. The Dukes outrushed Mercyhurst 356-12. They outgained the Lakers 445-118. They outpossessed the number one time of possession team in the NEC 36 minutes to 23. So in that regard, they kind of beat Mercyhurst on their home field at their own game. Riddell threw the touchdown pass on the opening drive, but he only needed to throw 13 attempts for the entire game. He went 9 for 13 for 83 yards, a touchdown and a pick, and that's all they needed from their QB1. Ness Davis ran for 164 yards, had the long first quarter touchdown run, and the defense was masterful. Four sacks, two forced fumbles, the fumble return for a touchdown. Mercyhurst, 27 first half yards altogether. Well, in the meantime, Duquesne was up 27-0 at that point. It was pure domination for the Dukes in Erie, Pennsylvania. Now, while that game was going on between the two NEC unbeatens in Pennsylvania, the third NEC unbeaten going into last week was simultaneously putting their unblemished mark on the line atop Grimes Hill as the Central Connecticut State Blue Devils visited the Wagner Seahawks. The Seahawks turned some heads, jumping out in front to a 14-0 lead in the first quarter. First, the Seahawks took a chance. They went for it on fourth and goal at the 11, which you'll love to see. Jordan Barton found Jeremiah Colclough for an 11-yard touchdown, capping off a 12-play, 77-yard, 5-minute drive. Again, they scored on a fourth and goal at the 11, taking that chance, going for the touchdown instead of settling for three. That chance paid off for them. They took the early touchdown lead. And then on the ensuing possession, the Blue Devils appeared primed to answer right back. They marched all the way down to the Wagner 1, and they decided to go for it on a fourth and goal. But for them, it wasn't pay dirt. It was disaster. On the run play to Elijah Howard, the ball came loose and it was scooped up by Wagner's Jordan Johnson, who ran it back 92 yards for a fumble return touchdown. And Wagner up 14-0 against the team that was, again, trying to go to 3-0 in conference play and keep pace with the winner of that Duquesne and Mercyhurst game, which ended up being Duquesne. Now, look, in this one, we talked last week in our keys about the turnover differential being something I was going to keep an eye on. Central Connecticut, they lead the league in takeaways. Wagner, they lead the league in giveaways. Well, we did keep an eye on it, and in this game, it was a total role reversal. It was Wagner getting the takeaway and running it back to go up two scores on the reigning champions. The game would be tied at 17 going into the fourth quarter, and here we go again, another Central game going down to the final minute. We've seen this before. Minutes left, Wagner driving, second and 10 at the Central 13. Jordan Barton was picked off in the end zone by our guy Chris Jean. Central taking over now with 2:34 remaining. They had third down. Brady Olson was picked off for the second time in this game. He only had thrown one pick all season. He threw two in the fourth quarter. So now Wagner, they get the ball back with under two minutes to go. They had a first down at the Central 37, 1:19 left. They were right on the edge of field goal range. But on first down, they had an illegal substitution, which put them behind the sticks and put them well out of field goal range. They weren't able to capitalize on that after the penalty took them out of range and the game went into overtime. It was the second time in their last three games that Central sees OT. Now, in the overtime, the Blue Devils got the first possession. They ran it with Howard, which is a pretty good bet. He had 14 yards on the first carry, and then Brady Olson ran it in for the final 11 for a one-score lead. Wagner, they had possession now, trying to answer the Central score. It was 4th and 6 at the Blue Devil 21, a must-convert for Wagner, and Barton's pass for Colclaw was incomplete. It hit the turf, turnover on downs, and Central survives. A comeback win, 24-17 in overtime. Central has won five straight overtime games, and they improve to 3-0 in conference play, keeping pace with Duquesne. This also marked their 100th victory as a program in the NEC. Now, what's crazy is that in this one, Wagner actually won the turnover battle. They took it away three times. Central only had one takeaway. But the difference, Central outgained Wagner 378 to 246, and they held Wagner to 2 for 15 on third down. They sacked the Seahawks four times, and Wagner did have a tendency to shoot themselves in their own foot. They had 14 penalties for 90 yards, including the key one on the last drive of regulation when they had a chance to get into field goal range that set them back and led to the game staying tied at the end of the fourth quarter instead of Wagner having a chance to kick a game-winning field goal. Story number three, the LIU Sharks. They were coming off their much-needed bye week. They had lost four in a row, including their first two conference games, and they were down to their third quarterback. But Lucas Stanzani got healthy and was back as the starter on Saturday as the Sharks hosted the Robert Morris Colonials, who also saw their quarterback, Zach Tanner, return after missing a couple weeks due to a freak rib injury. For Stanzani, the last time he was on the field for LIU was at home, and they were leading Sacred Heart 21-7. Since he left that game, not much great things has happened. Sacred Heart came back and won that game, and then LIU lost the next 3 weeks as well. So after the bye week, rested up, Luca back, the Sharks hoping to get back that spark on their offense. After a scoreless first quarter, LIU started the second with a 6-yard touchdown run by O'Shawn Ross to go up 7-0. Robert Morris that had back-to-back drive stall first with a missed field goal and then a Zach Tanner interception. So LIU took advantage off of the turnover drive, going four plays, 15 yards, Lucas Stanzani with a 5-yard touchdown pass to his tight end, Jaden Dozier. Sharks go up 14-0. Now, Robert Morris did make things a little interesting in the fourth quarter. Tanner had a quick strike, 66-yard touchdown pass to his back, Ethan Shine, but LIU put together a lengthy drive that, although it was only eight plays and ended with a punt, they didn't get any points off of it. It took nearly 6 minutes off the clock in the fourth quarter. And after a three and out with Robert Morris backed up in their own end, they had no choice but to punt. LIU got great field position, drilled a 42-yard field goal with a minute and change remaining to go up two scores and ice the game. The Sharks would win it 17-7. LIU dominated time of possession 38 minutes to 22 while outrushing the Colonials 197 to 47. When LIU is at its best, they dominate time of possession, and they run the football. Stanzani was 15 for 26 passing for 103 yards, a touchdown, and a pick in his return, while Ross led the team on the ground with 110 yards and a touchdown. Tanner, in his return for the Colonials, finished 14 for 26, 177 yards. He also had a touchdown and an interception in his return for Bobby Moe. Well, thanks to the long touchdown, Shine had 8 receptions for 119 yards and the touchdown. Now, our final game from Saturday saw Stonehill fall at Yale 47-7 in Stonehill's final non-conference test. Yale scored on their first 9 drives and didn't have to punt the football until the fourth quarter. Now, here's a little Craig's positivity corner for the Skyhawks, even though they lost 47-7. Charles Battaglia, Richard Mosley III, both finished double figures in tackles. Something positive. Well, Aiden Garrett scored the lone touchdown for Stonehill, scoring his first career rushing touchdown. Another positive note to take out for Stonehill. And it came in the fourth quarter, yard out, capping off a 9-play, 57-yard, 5-minute scoring drive for the Skyhawks. Now, for New Haven, they enter this week with a winning record at 4-3 overall under interim head coach Mark Powell. They've won 4 out of their last 5. The Chargers have only 3 games left for the entire season, back-to-back games on the road, an unofficial conference game against LIU, a road game against Sacred Heart, and their finale back on the blue turf on November the 8th against Merrimack. The Chargers will be off. They will be on byes the final 2 weeks of the regular season, so only a few more limited opportunities left to watch New Haven in their inaugural Division I campaign. The Chargers will be back playing a full league schedule next season. So the shakeup at the top of the NEC standings has our three NEC unbeaten teams coming into the week drop down to just two: Central Connecticut and Duquesne, who were the co-champions last year. They're the last two remaining conference unbeatens at 3-0 atop the league standings here going into week nine this year. And by the way, in case anyone's wondering, those two teams will meet head-to-head in Pittsburgh on the penultimate week of the regular season. Now, Mercyhurst, they lost to Duquesne head-to-head, but they still remain one game behind the top spot at 2-1. Stonehill is in fourth place at 1-1 against the NEC, while LIU picked up their first NEC win. They are 1-2. Then we have our teams who are still winless in league play. None of New Haven's limited games this year count in conference play, so they will forever be 0-0, while Robert Morris, St. Francis, and Wagner all stand at 0-2. Now, time for our top three stars of the week. We begin with our honorable mentions, starting with Central Connecticut State grad student quarterback Brady Olson, who was 25 for 45 for 251 yards, a touchdown, and two interceptions. He also ran seven times for 35 yards and had the game-winning 11-yard touchdown run in the bonus session. So it was kind of an up-down week for Brady Olson. He had two interceptions after only having one for the entire season coming into this week. That's not good, but he also had the game-winning touchdown run, and he made the plays when his team needed to keep Central among the ranks of the league unbeatens. Another honorable mention is Duquesne grad student defensive lineman Kevin Kurzinger, who had a career-high two sacks against Mercyhurst. Central Connecticut State senior linebacker Malachi Wright is another honorable mention. He had nine tackles and a sack against Robert Morris. And from Robert Morris, junior running back Ethan Shine is an honorable mention. 66-yard touchdown catch for Robert Morris's only points against LIU. He finished the day with eight catches for 119 yards and a score. Our number three star of the week is LIU redshirt junior running back O'Shawn Ross. Ross ran 23 times for 110 yards and a touchdown in LIU's home victory over Robert Morris to end a four-game slide. It was Ross's second 100 rushing yard game this season. He had 130 back on September 20th at URI. Ross had a 7-yard touchdown run to get the scoring started. It was his second rushing touchdown of the season. Our number two star is Duquesne grad student linebacker Avery Morris. Morris is really representing the entire Duquesne defense because, as we said earlier when we recapped the Duquesne Mercyhurst game, we could say the entire defense for Duquesne was a star with some of the numbers that they put up and some of the numbers that they limited the Lakers to. The entire Duquesne defense could possibly be the number one star this week, but we have to pick one guy, so we're going to single out Morris. Morris led the way with nine tackles, and he scored on a 35-yard fumble return for a touchdown. Our number one star of the week is from Duquesne, and no, it's not Tyler Riddell. It's their junior running back, Ness Davis. Tyler Riddell has been in our top three this year all season long. This is the first time all year he is not in the top three because Ness Davis made quite a statement with the run game in the biggest game of the week that they didn't really need Tyler Riddell to do that much. So, representing Duquesne, the number one team, their number one rusher, our new number one star, Davis ran the ball for the first five straight plays of the game, setting up a 10-play scoring drive. Overall, he had 17 carries for 164 yards and a touchdown, his third 100-yard rushing game of the season, and his 59-yard touchdown on the first play of the second drive, as it turned out, was the one that put the game away. Davis helped Duquesne rush for 366 yards overall on the day, their highest rushing total in a game since 2018. Ness Davis, our number one star for the Duquesne Dukes. Up next here on NEC Football on the Run, it is time for our Commitment to Success Spotlight, brought to you by Provident Bank. Commitment you can count on. Today we go from one running back to another. He'll be Ness Davis's counterpart on Saturday as the Dukes visit Wagner on ESPN Plus. Today we welcome in Wagner's running back, Andre Hines Jr. Up next here on NEC Football on the Run, it is time for our Commitment to Success Spotlight, brought to you by Provident Bank. Provident Bank, commitment you can count on. Joining us today is the running back from the Wagner College Seahawks, grad student Andre Hines Jr. Andre, welcome to the spotlight.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me.
We're so excited to have you on board here with us this week. This is quite a part of Wagner's schedule right now. You're playing last year's co-champions back-to-back weeks, both at home though. You had Central Connecticut State last week, a tough overtime loss, and then you have Duquesne coming up this week. Let's go back to last week for a second though. When you assess the offense in that game, what's one area that you think the team fared very well on, and what's one area that you think the offense still needs to improve on?
I think we established ourselves very early in the game. Tremendous thing that we did, especially with me breaking off like a 20-yard plus run to get the game going. Guys feed off momentum. There's a lot of things we need to work on. There's still here and there, because we came out with a loss. But right now our O-line is young, so we got a lot of guys banged up, and we got a lot of guys first time starting. So it's all just a learning experience for them. Everybody bonding together and gelling together this late in the season.
How tough is it just, emotionally to get yourself all up for 1 week, exert all that energy, take your opponent to the limit, fall just short, and now you kind of have to come back and do that all over again against a just as good, maybe even better opponent here
Right.
this week. So how do you kind of do that, emotionally, kind of get yourself up all over again, starting from scratch?
I think it's just the nature of the game. You take a L, or you get, you fall down, you get right back up onto the next one. Like you said, like we onto the next play, next game, everything, next man up mentality. So we just here getting ready for Duquesne, and they're the next people up on our schedule.
So let's talk about your football journey here for a second. How was it? When was it growing up that you kind of fell in love with the game of football?
I grew up playing football in my neighborhood. I live in Staten Island, so I'm from Staten Island. I live in the Park Hills, so I grew up with a lot of the kids playing football. That's where I fell in love with it, and from there, this is where everything took off. I went to Erasmus Hall High School. From there, I went to Boston College, and now I'm here, back at home.
Like you said, from Staten Island, made your way to Boston College, then coming back home. What was it that caught your eye about Wagner that let you know that this was the place for you?
It's the coaches. They have Coach Munson over there, Coach Masella, and they have my boy Quincy Barnes over there. And me and Quincy go way back. He was like, we played on the same youth team, and yeah, so that's where it was like a family bond that I was missing from Boston College, and I got it here. So it was like a one-way ticket. I knew I was coming here.
Now, last year you missed the first couple games, but we actually called the game against Stonehill for ESPN Plus when you made
Right.
your Wagner debut. And I remember talking with Coach Masella before the game, and he said, "Hey, watch out for this Hines kid. We're gonna give him a lot of carries. He might have a big day." And you did, 16 carries, 71 yards. The entire team really ran the ball well that day. What do you
Right.
remember so much about that game against Stonehill and your debut in a Wagner uniform?
It was a lot of emotion. First game back, coming back from an injury, a severe surgery as that with my shoulder. And I was ready to ball. I've been out for the whole season, damn near. And yeah.
So, Andre, we know you're a physical running back. You run with power. You had a couple 100-yard rushing games this year. So, I guess it's a weird question to ask, but do you enjoy that contact? Because, if you're going to be successful, you kind of have to, take some punishment, dish out some punishment. So, do you is that something you enjoy about the game?
That's something I definitely do enjoy. With my stature and stuff like that, being 6'2", 235, I gotta enjoy the contact, the biggest thing of my game. So I like to deliver the blow, and it helps me, give momentum to my team, help my teammates feed off of it when they see me run through a guy or two.
Now, you mentioned your teammates this year, your running back room. You have yourself and some very talented backs. Sekou's
Yes,
there,
sir.
Matt Morad's there.
Yes,
Your
sir.
quarterbacks can even run if they need to. So,
Yes, sir.
what do you like best about those other guys that you have running the football this year for the team?
The best thing about us, we complement each other. Right now, we have a our identity is Legion 3. It's not just one of us, it's all three of us, and that's the biggest thing. I think when we step on the field, we like to show everybody that we have the best core running back room in the conference. And I think we prove that every week in and week out. So yeah, I think we have a great group of young guys living there that's ready to take over when they get the opportunity to.
Now, we all love to watch you guys run the football, but you know who doesn't? Duquesne. They don't like watching anybody run the football. They're the number one rush defense in the NEC. They only allow about 114 per game. So, looking ahead to this game, what are going to be some keys for you guys to be successful on Saturday?
It seems like a little challenge, but ain't nothing for it for us, so You know, we're just going to keep on doing what we do. You know, our best thing is our run game, and that's what we're going to stay doing. And, you know, may the best man win.
Oh, we look forward to watching it. Now we have some quick hitters for you. These are the final five. So quick hitters, first thing that comes to mind, just let it out, all right?
All right.
All right, your go-to karaoke song.
Mr. Brightside.
Ooh, okay, great one. Your favorite Halloween candy.
Reese's.
Okay, can't go wrong. Your favorite player, past or present, that you love watching play?
Eric Dickerson.
Wow, okay. Day game or night game? Which do you prefer?
Night game. Under
okay.
the lights, can't beat it.
All right. And final question, if we surveyed your teammates and asked them to come up with a word to describe you, what word do you think they would come up with?
Funny.
Okay, all right. It was a pleasure chatting with you here today, Andre.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We wish you the best of luck coming up on Saturday and the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Now, you could check out Andre and the Seahawks Saturday at noon. It's Halloween at Hamline as they host the Duquesne Dukes. It's on ESPN+ and the ESPN app. And be sure to check out the full episode of the NEC Football On the Run podcast. It's on part of the NEC Overtime Pod, wherever you get your podcasts. This has been the Commitment to Success Spotlight, brought to you by Provident Bank. So now we look ahead to the final Saturday in October. It is a four-game weekend. Once again, all four games, though, are NEC games. Three official, one unofficial. While Central Connecticut gets a bye week with their perfect league record still intact. Let's preview the weekend ahead. Here's what's coming up week 9 on tap. We start with Stonehill at Mercyhurst, 12 noon on NEC Front Row. Both of these teams had their perfect conference season hopes dashed by Duquesne in their last conference outing. For Stonehill, that was 2 weeks ago in Pittsburgh, and for Mercyhurst, that was last Saturday in Erie. So both these teams have something in common. Now they meet for the first time head-to-head to see which team stays with one loss in their conference record and stays one game off the pace for the top spot, and which team now will take on two conference losses and most likely will sit out the rest of the season from the title picture. Both defenses this year for Stonehill and Mercyhurst have been okay. You know, they've been okay except when they had to play Duquesne. All the other games, they've been okay. So the key may lie in which team can be consistent on the offensive side of the ball. And you would think Mercyhurst would have an offensive advantage. They have the offensive lead in the numbers in just about every offensive category that you look at. In particular, they're averaging 3 points better and 80 yards better than the Skyhawks in both scoring and total yard average. So can they flex on the offense against the likes of Charles Battaglia, Richard Mosley, and this Skyhawk defense? That could be the question that decides this game, Stonehill and Mercyhurst, 12 noon on Saturday. New Haven will be at LIU at noon on NEC Front Row. LIU is back at home. They got off a much-needed bye week. They ended a four-game skid, and they got back one of their quarterbacks in Lucas Stanzani in last week's victory over Robert Morris. We mentioned this last week, but we know LIU, they love finishing strong. They are 10-2 over the last four games of the season, each of the last 3 years under Coach Cooper. Now, this is the last game before we get to that final four-game stretch. So can LIU begin their trademark end-of-the-year run a little bit early this year? Standing in their way is New Haven with A.J. Duffy at the controls, who's been fantastic, leading this team their first go-around in Division I in the NEC, playing a partial league schedule. AJ Duffy's at the controls of an offense that right now is number one in the NEC. They average not 399 total yards per game. They're going up against LIU, who has the number two defense in the league right now. LIU only gives up 328 per night. So something has to give in that one. Great offense, really good defense. We'll see what wins out Saturday over in Long Island. Then you have Robert Morris and St. Francis, 3 p.m. on NEC Front Row. Two teams who are both looking for their first NEC victory of the year, and one of them will get it. In this, the final chapter of the Keystone State Collision rivalry between St. Francis and Robert Morris in Loretto at DeGaulle Field, the first of four straight home games for St. Francis. Now, in this rivalry, St. Francis had won seven straight meetings before the Colonials claimed each of the last three in 2019, 2023, and last year, a 17-0 Colonial victory in Moon Township. And our fourth game to watch is our game of the week. It's Duquesne at Wagner, 12 noon on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. The Dukes on Saturday against Mercyhurst, as we mentioned earlier in the show, looked like a complete championship football team at virtually every single metric, every single angle you look at it. They controlled the clock. They won the battle in the trenches, both offensive line, defensive line. They ran the football. They created turnovers. They were disciplined. The special teams units were great in coverage and even chipped in points to help the cause with field goals. Duquesne looked like a team that was trying to send a message that had something to prove, and they did it with an incredible performance to remain atop the league standings unbeaten. Now, I know what everybody's thinking. Let's just fast forward to the Central Duquesne game, the next to last week of the season, and perhaps that is where everything ends up when all is said and done. But don't fall into the same trap that the Blue Devils nearly did last week. Don't overlook these Wagner Seahawks who are playing at home. Central, we saw last week, they were not crisp coming out of the gate, and Wagner took advantage. They jumped on top 14-0, and Central had to scratch and claw just to get back in the game and pull it out in the end. In the overtime session, we talked with Andre Hines earlier in the show during our spotlight about exerting all that effort and emotion just to fall short and now having to start fresh all over again against an opponent who may be equal or even better than Central, depending on your point of view. Definitely won't be easy just to get yourself up again after exerting all your energy and falling short. But then again, we could say Duquesne exerted all their energy too last week, trying to send a message to Mercyhurst, which they did. So can Duquesne pick it back up again on the road atop Grimes Hill? Every metric in this game is pointing to Duquesne's favor. Duquesne, the number two offense, 367 yards per game. Wagner, dead last in defense. They give up 400 yards per game. That's not good. Duquesne averages 20 points better scoring than Wagner does. Duquesne has allowed the second fewest sacks. Wagner has allowed the most sacks, just to name a few. Historically, Duquesne has won the last 10 straight meetings between these two schools, including 42-21 last year in Pittsburgh. Darius Parentis threw for nearly 400 yards and had six touchdown passes. The last time Wagner beat Duquesne head-to-head was back in November of 2014, 23-13 in Staten Island. So it's been a minute. For Wagner to have a chance in this one, they need to pressure the quarterback, create turnovers, avoid turnovers, establish the run, and I'm going to say they need to get a score either from defense or special teams. The Dukes, they're about to play their ninth straight weekend of football without an off week since this thing got started. Now that changes next week when Duquesne finally gets their bye. But can the Seahawks catch them off their game early, just like they did Central? Maybe still, you know, not quite getting those juices going like they did last week. Maybe starting to look ahead to that bye week next week. Can Wagner catch Duquesne off guard? Or will Duquesne come in with that championship mentality that we've seen week in, week out under Coach Schmidt? We will find out on Saturday, 12 noon, ESPN Plus. Paul Dottino, Kevin Gilbride will be on the call. We look forward to watching it. Well, that'll just about do it for this episode. We'll be back next week to recap it all, hopefully with my voice. Until next time, I'm Craig D'Amico, and this has been NEC Football on the Run.